Amen. You guys can grab a seat. While you're doing that, would you thank our band for leading us today? Thanks, you guys. Hey, today we're in Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. My name's Jason, by the way. Good to be with you today. And I'm really, really excited to be opening God's Word with you and to hear what He's got to say to us. We're in Matthew 6. We are in the Sermon on the Mount. It's a sermon that Jesus preached. It's the most disruptive sermon of all time. It takes reality as we see it. We think things are one way, and Jesus says, actually, it's this way. It's different, and it rocks our world. It rocks how we understand ourselves and how we see the world around us through the lens of the truth of God, through ultimate reality. And when we actually practice living in the ways that Jesus calls us to live, we're living out our humanity as God intended it to be. When we do things our own way, we actually are less than human. It's destructive, and it actually does damage. So when Jesus calls us to live this way, we're talking about how to be human in the way that God has designed us to be human. And so today we're going to be talking about money and possessions. And we're not talking about how much of it we have, which is a good thing because each of us have different amounts of wealth. We're actually talking about how big of a deal it is to us. How big of a deal is your wealth? How big of a deal is your money? How big of a deal is your stuff to you? When we count on wealth too much, when it becomes too big of a deal, it's dehumanizing. It makes us less than human. So that's what Jesus is addressing here in this part of the Sermon on the Mount. Now, the issue here is the issue of focus. What you focus on affects your whole life. Jesus related this idea of focus specifically to our possessions and our money, because every one of us at some point has focused on money and stuff. In fact, we're trained to do that. We're groomed to do that. It's the way of the culture. It started when we were little kids. We were watching Saturday morning cartoons. I don't know what your favorite cartoon is or whatever. And I know now people don't watch them just on Saturdays. They watch them all the time because there's entire, you know, channels devoted to our addiction to cartoons. And so our kids' addiction to cartoons. And so you watch cartoons and then the commercial comes on. And you see the thing. Just try to remember this when you were a little kid. You see the thing that you didn't know existed. But all of a sudden, the world's a better place because that thing exists. And it would even be better if it existed in your bedroom. For me, that was the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier. I remember seeing that, and like it was, I think it's 5 feet long. And I was just blown away that such a thing could actually be in my bedroom. And so we see these things, and we go tell our parents, hey, I want that. I want that toy. I want that thing. And then they're like, well, that costs money. And so then we as children say, well, you've got money, so buy it for me. And like, well, we don't have money for that. And then your whole orientation to life changes, right? Do you remember when it changed for you? I don't remember the specific time. I just know that I started learning this stuff when I was really little. It's like game on. From a very young age, you know? Live the story of accumulating more money so you can buy more stuff. And when that stuff breaks, buy more and get more money and so on. And that's how we live. We live that story. Many people live that story till the day they die. See, the main idea of what Jesus is getting at here is that when we fix our eyes on God, when we fix our eyes on God, He shines light on our wealth. He shines light on our possessions and on our money so that we can actually see them for what they are. And what they are resources to be used for things that last. Resources to be used for things that last. So let's look at this in Matthew chapter 6, verse 22. The issue of focus. What you focus on. Matthew 6, 22. Jesus says this, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Jesus says the eye is the lamp of the body. The word eye used here is synonymous for the word heart that's used in other places in Scripture. Psalm 119 is a good example of this. There's talking about setting our eyes on God and giving our hearts to God. Same thing. It's about what we fix our attention to. It's about our focus. There's actually a better word for the word healthy in verse 22. There's a better word for healthy when it describes our eyes, and that word is single. But that word doesn't show up in our Bibles unless you have a King James Version. If you've got a King James Version, you got the goods today because the word single, when it says single eye, that's actually a more literal translation of what Jesus said. But if we read single eye like in our Bibles, and like this is the NIV, if we read that in our Bibles, we'd say single eye, that doesn't make sense. What do we think of when we think of the single eye? We think of a pirate. Like, it doesn't, that, I'm not a pirate. Is Jesus talking to me here? But what it means, single means, is a singular focus. A singular focus on God and on serving Him. That's what a healthy eye is, according to Jesus. Now, when He's the one that we focus on, Jesus says we've got healthy eyes. We have light to see things properly. You can think of this sort of like the headlights on your car. When you're driving and it's very dark, having your headlights turned on and pointed down the road shows you where to go. When our eyes are focused on God, it lights up the road ahead of us. It illuminates things in front of us. It illuminates and helps us properly see our wealth, our possessions, and our money. It also releases more light within us. As worshiping God becomes our focus, His light exposes our twisted motives. His light exposes our warped ways of thinking. I have friends, one of their frequent prayers is that God would actually release more light so that they can see. So that they can see what it is that God is calling them to do. So that they can see who they are. So they can see who God is. It's a great prayer request. But that's what a healthy eye is. Now, on the other hand, a life that's focused on serving self plunges us into blindness. It's like driving on a road, a very dark road, without headlights. I want to just tell you, I've done that a few times. I've driven down a very dark road without headlights. Sometimes, when I'm coming home from Seattle and it's maybe late at night, I have family and friends that live in Seattle, and so frequently I'll be driving down I-5 late at night, and just for fun, I'll hit a stretch of the freeway where there's no street lights, and I'll just for a minute, like not even a whole minute, like a second, I'll just turn my headlights off. And it's amazing how little you can see and how well your headlights work. You don't really think about it when you drive around the city and there's street. But when you're out and you're like, wow, those things actually do something. My wife hates it when I do that. She hits me. Jay, turn on the lights. And it's just fun. It's okay. So, this is an illustration of what Jesus is talking about, that when you focus on yourself, you can't see properly. It's like driving with your lights off. An unhealthy eye is an eye that lacks a singular focus on God. It's focused on other things. It's focused on pretty things. It's focused on dazzling things. It's focused on things that make you look good. It's focused on things that make you feel good. Ironically, when we focus on serving ourselves, it actually feels enlightening to us in some way. For maybe momentarily. But what Jesus says about that is that light that you think you have is actually darkness. Because a self-serving life ultimately makes us intolerant, self-absorbed, ruthless, less than human. See, possessions and money, they compete with God for our focus. And so Jesus addresses each one separately. First, he addresses possessions. Let's look at this. Matthew 6, the couple verses right before the ones we just read, 6:19. Listen to what Jesus says here about possessions. These things compete for our focus, right? He says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Possessions are about comfort more often than not. Either the possessions themselves give us some sense of comfort, or having stuff gives us a sense of status that's comforting. Storing up possessions then is really about storing up comfort. This approach to life is rooted in the philosophy of materialism. Materialism is a philosophy that says the only thing that's real is material stuff. Things that you can see, touch, taste, tangible things. Matter. Matter is the only thing that's real. Materialism does not believe that there's any spiritual reality. Now, most of us in this room probably believe that there's a spiritual reality as well as a material reality. We believe that there are things that are real, that are spiritual. And yet, we live like practical materialists. When our ultimate source of comfort is the stuff that we have, or the status that we derive from the stuff that we have. We're practical materialists. We're practicing materialism. Now, materialism doesn't always mean stockpiling more stuff. It doesn't mean stockpiling, you know, more houses, more cars, more clothes. That's certainly part of it. It can also be about stockpiling the right stuff. Perfect stuff, ideal stuff. Sometimes it's stockpiling not a lot of stuff, but good stuff. We are in a time when it's super trendy to downsize. But let's not get delusional and think that because we're downsizing, we're not materialists. You know, I mean, like, let me give you an example. So, tiny houses. They're way cooler. Way cooler than normal ones. For some people, I guess. And then you move into one and you're like, this is not that cool. It's small. But right now, they're way, it's a status thing. It's comforting. So just because we're not maybe accumulating as much, or it's cool to accumulate less, perhaps, it doesn't mean that we're not deriving our sense of comfort, ultimately, from stuff. Now, there's nothing wrong with wanting comfort. And there's nothing wrong with having stuff. You know, I'm wearing shoes right now, and it's more comfortable than standing up here in bare feet, in my opinion. And it's more comfortable for you to look at me with shoes on than... There's nothing wrong with having stuff that makes us comfortable. We need stuff to meet our needs. But we're not given stuff by God primarily to serve ourselves. When God shines his light on our stuff, when the headlights come on, we actually see that he gives us our stuff to meet our needs, yes, but to benefit others. That's where Jesus goes here. See, when our lives revolve around stockpiling the right stuff for our own comfort, Jesus says it's a bad investment. It's a terrible investment. And the reason it's such a terrible investment is because stuff always needs to be replaced. It always wears out. I talked to some friends who were having a house built, and a bunch of their stuff was stored in bins, and then they took their bins and they put them into a barn. And while the house was being built, the stuff sat in bins in the barn, and then the house got finished, and then they went into the barn and they took out their bins and they opened their bins, and there was mold on their stuff. And then they opened another bin, and there were maggots crawling all over their clothes. That sucks. But that's stuff. That's what happens to stuff. That's what Jesus is saying. It's a lousy investment. If your ultimate source of comfort is having stuff, It's going to be disappointing because it's subject to rust. It's subject to, you know, maggots. It's subject to mold. It's subject to people coming and stealing it and taking it from you. It's a poor investment. The thing that you treasure is the thing that gets your heart. And God's concern here is that when our hearts are possessed by our stuff, it's by nature heartbreaking. Materialism is bad for our souls. So Jesus' way for finding comfort is by investing in things that truly last. Not by accumulating as much stuff as possible, but actually investing in doing things that matter forever. Things that can't be taken away, things that can't be stolen, things that maggots can't destroy, that mold can't ruin. That we would actually invest ourselves in doing those types of things. God wants us to experience comfort. Our desire for comfort deeply matters to Him. But He wants us to find it by storing up treasures in heaven. A treasure in heaven is something that we do now that has good and eternal significance. Forgiveness, worship, caring for the poor, healing, showing up at work and working hard, empathizing with your spouse's pain, celebrating with your child when they have joy. These kinds of things last. These are the kinds of things that people remember. These are the kinds of things that impact us and impact the people around us that can't be stolen. They can't be taken away. They don't fade or wear out or tarnish. Nobody can take these things away from you. How comforting is that? See, your relationship with God is the ultimate good thing that lasts, which means it's the ultimate investment. There is nothing that can wreck your relationship with God. Not even death separates you from Jesus. For those who believe, we belong to Him now and forever. So time spent with Him is always a good investment. It's a good investment 100% of the time. God Himself is our comforter, ultimately, because His role in our lives simply never ends. It never fades away. We need more light to see stuff, material stuff, for what it is. The comfort it provides is temporary. So instead of stockpiling it, steward it. Use it. Use the stuff that God has given you to take care of your needs and to bless people around you. Share your stuff. This has good and lasting value that possessing it just simply can't deliver. I have some friends who I would imagine that they have more wealth than probably, I don't know this for a fact, but I would imagine they have more wealth than anybody in this room. One of the things that they have a lot of is art. They have collected fine art for a long time, for decades. And some of their artwork was sitting in storage, and they had this bright idea one day. They said, you know what? It's not doing anybody any good in storage. I mean, someday those paintings are going to wear out. They're going to fade away. They're not going to last forever. Why don't we use these? God gave them to us. Why don't we use them to benefit somebody else? And so they put them on display at a local school. Children can see them. Teachers, parents, families, they come in and they enjoy them. They're taking their stuff and they're seeing it for what it is. It's just stuff. But it's stuff that can actually be used to bless somebody else. It's a simple example of what it looks like to invest in things that don't wear out, to invest in things that last. Now, Jesus addresses materialism. He addresses possession. And then he shifts gears and he addresses money. Verse 24. Listen to this. He says, "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." If material possessions are connected to comfort, money is connected to security. It's connected to security. Money provides, money protects. Without money, a person can't survive in Portland or Vancouver or anywhere in the metro area. We need more money now to live here than we used to. Let's not pretend that money's a bad thing, that it's somehow evil inherently. Because if you didn't have any money, you wouldn't be here today. I mean, money is necessary. It's necessary. But what happens is when we don't have enough of it, our sense of security is threatened. We become vulnerable. The safety net that we depend on is called into question. It becomes sketchy. So it's important that we're clear about something here. Jesus isn't just talking to rich people. He's not just talking to poor people. Sometimes when he talked about money, he spoke to one crowd or the other. He would speak directly to the rich, to the wealthy. Other times he would speak to the poor. Here he's talking to everyone from across the financial spectrum. And the reason he's speaking, and the issue that he's speaking to here is his concern. His concern is not how much money you have, it's how much money has you. For Jesus, this is clear cut. It's black and white. You will either be a slave to God or you will be a slave to money. Only one can be your ultimate source of security. Listen to what he says. He says, you cannot serve both God and money. Now, you don't have to raise your hand. But how many of you, when you hear Jesus say that, you can't serve both God and money, you're like, try me. Like, I think I could. I sure wouldn't mind trying. Most of us, that's how I respond when I hear it. I think I can sort of live the best of both worlds, that I could, you know, serve money and kind of make that my focus, maybe for 6 or 8 hours. And then over here, I could serve God, like maybe 6 or 8. I could divide my time up. And what Jesus does to help us to avoid that kind of thinking is he doesn't say that money and God are your boss, because you could have two jobs, right? I mean, you could work for... He says, God's a slave driver, and so is money. You're going to either be enslaved to one or the other. See, a slave driver, a slave master says everything. I get everything, including your money. Money says the same thing. I get everything. Total devotion. And the thing is about this is that the one you choose, they actually put us on different paths. If you choose to serve money, you put yourself on the greedy path. It's just the way it is. It's black and white for Jesus. And if you choose God, you choose the generous path. That's it. Cut and dry. Now, Jesus gives us a way for us to test ourselves here, to see whether or not we're slaves to God or money. And he says, really, it's a question. It's actually a statement. He says, you're either going to love one and hate the other, or you're going to love the other and hate the one. Now, we hear that, and we go, well, I wouldn't say that I, you know, hate money. I love God, but doesn't mean I hate money. I kind of like money. It's pretty cool, you know. Reach in your pocket, pull out a 20 spot, buy yourself some lunch. Didn't even know that was there. I like this stuff, right? I mean, I don't hate it. What does he mean? He's talking about comparison. Which do you love by comparison? Which do you love more? That's what Jesus is getting after here. He's asking us to ask ourselves this question, and this is a difficult question to answer because it's nuanced, it's subtle. And so I was struggling as I was preparing to think about, like, what does that look like? What does it look like when we love money? When money is our master? How does that show up? And so I asked my friends, I asked some of the guys that are in my discipleship huddle. I said, what do you guys think? How can you tell when you're falling in love with money? And their responses, hey, good responses. I'm going to share a couple of them with you. See if any of these resonate with you. Test your heart here. How do you know you're falling in love with money? Generosity goes down and giving to the church gets really hard. Anxiety about money goes up. I resent those who have more than I do. My sense of self-worth comes from how much money I have or how much money I make. Safety and happiness come from money. Managing money takes priority over time with God or loved ones. And this one just blew me away. One of the guys said, "When I'm falling in love with money, I desire more money and I don't even have a plan for it." See, the easiest thing in the world for us to do with a talk like this is to rationalize this away. Jesus' point here, to actually just say, well, he's not really talking to me. And we rationalize it away. We say things like, well, there's nothing wrong with making money. That's totally irrelevant to what Jesus is saying. So if you've been sitting here going, well, there's nothing wrong with making money, that's not even what Jesus is talking about. Of course there's nothing wrong with making money. You need money to live in Portland. Not even what Jesus is talking about. We rationalize this away. We say things like, well, there's other people who are more focused on money than I am. Or, I don't accumulate as much stuff as some other people do. And so we determine that Jesus must be talking to somebody else and not to us. And when we do that, we miss the point entirely of what he's saying here. Jesus is challenging our focus. He's challenging the thing that we give our hearts to. Fixing our eyes on God shines light on our wealth so that we can see them for what they are, so that we can see it for what it is. So that we can see that money and possessions are resources that he calls us to use for things that last. This isn't about whether you should have nice things or make good money. It's shedding light on them for what they truly are. So that we won't make the just grave and destructive error of making wealth our master. When our focus is serving God and others, the dreams for our money actually start to change. We start to dream about how we can meet needs. We start to dream about how we can bless people. Comfort and security in Christ, when we focus on that and we fix our eyes on that, it helps us to loosen the grip on our wealth and wealth's grip on us so that we can use our wealth to care for others. This is evidence that you're actually seeing wealth properly. This is evidence that the headlights are on as you're driving down the road. That you've got a different dream for your stuff and for your money. Generosity is part of our vision for who we're becoming as a church family. And it's not because we're mainly about trying to get people to give more, to give more, give more, give more, and accumulate more. That's not what it's about. It's actually coming from a place of deep theological conviction. A deep place of theological conviction that starts with the person of God, a generous God who gave his very best for us. He invested in treasures in heaven. Jesus practiced what he preached. He was doing that. When God sent Jesus, he was investing in treasures in heaven. He was making an investment. He was saying, I want to share from my abundance, from my riches, my wealth, my grace. I want to share that with the world. And so he sent Christ. This is a theological conviction we have, that our generosity would grow because we have a generous God. We're called to be mastered by Jesus so that we can be masters of whatever wealth we may have, whether you have a lot or whether you have a little, so that we can use the stuff that God has given us for things that last. I've heard stories recently about people in our church family who've let folks live with them for short stints of time. Somebody was between housing, and so other people opened their homes and said, hey, come and live with us for a short period of time because you need a place. I've heard and we've seen readiness in this community, in this church family, to meet needs, to fix somebody a meal, to let somebody borrow a car, to help somebody with a home repair. Let's keep growing in generosity so that as needs arise, we can just sort of erase them, right? That's how it looked in the book of Acts. That was the vision the picture is painted as people were so ready to share their stuff that anytime a need arises, it just sort of was erased. Like the community, or the church erased it. And what if we saw our stuff as not only just benefiting our own church family, but those outside of our walls? What if instead of every time we drive around our city and we just grumble about the homeless problem? What if we said, you know what? I got stuff. I got money. I can write a check. And I can give it to Union Gospel Mission. I can give it to Portland Rescue Mission. And I can actually help throw a line to somebody instead of just grumbling about it. What if we joined one of our life groups who have made this commitment to a refugee family? To taking some of the stuff they have to love this family and meet needs. That we'd actually have that kind of vision as a church, and that would grow in us. So that God could actually use our stuff to erase needs that we see in our church and in our neighborhoods. See, if generosity is a struggle for you, and I know it's a struggle for a lot of us, two very quick places to start. First, generosity grows where there's worship. Generosity grows where there's worship, because when we worship, when we magnify and sing and celebrate our almighty, powerful judge, who's also our Father and who's good and who's full of truth and grace and holiness, when we worship him, our wealth starts to pale in comparison. We start to look at our stuff and go, it's just not that great compared to him. Worship breeds generosity. And then second, thankfulness breeds generosity. Where there's gratitude to God for all that he's given to you, generosity will grow. You might say, man, I just don't have that much stuff. I have very little money. Thank God for that. And thank God for what you do have. Tell him. Tell him you're grateful. Tell him you're grateful for the clothes on your back and the shoes on your feet. Like, develop a sense of appreciation for the goodness of God. And generosity will grow in your heart. This table reminds us of how God meets our greatest need by generously giving his Son, who died for our redemption, to forgive our sin, to make us his own. But here's the thing about this table. You might want to think twice about coming to this table today. If wealth is more important to you than God, and you don't want that to change. See, sometimes we come to communion and we're trying to get something off of God, something we want. I want you to forgive my sins so that I can go keep sinning. I want you to be the Lord over my spiritual life so that I can be the master of my material life. And what Jesus says to us today is that a life of discipleship is when he's our master. When our focus and our eyes are fixed on him. Now, I want to be really, really careful here. If you right now are wrestling and you're like, going, man, I love Jesus, but right now wealth is more important to me, but that I don't want it to be that way. I don't want that to be the case. Come to this table. Receive grace. Receive mercy. Receive a second chance from your generous God who loves you. But if you want to be the master of your stuff, if you want to be the Lord of your wallet, your checkbook, and you're just trying to get something off of God today, this table is not the place for you. Jesus wants everything. And when we give him everything, he meets us. And so if you need to reprioritize and put him back on the throne, come to this table. Receive his love, receive his mercy.